You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Noir-vember, Noir-vember 2. What you gonna do when we noir for you? Noir-vember, Noir-vember. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when we noir for you? Music.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Hey, guys. I have this really crazy plan. You guys want to hear it?
Oh, no. And Erica?
Wouldn't it just be easier to get a divorce? I don't know. It feels like... Is that crazy? Is that too crazy of a plan? Is that too simple?
He would kill her. He was going to kill her.
I just don't know that murder needs to be your first choice.
He was going to get her first. That was clear.
Competitive couple.
Seriously.
They compete in all things, including murder. And welcome back to Noir-vember 2. That's right. We are back doing the noir films that New World maybe made. Maybe it's noir. In fact, I really have to say, this might be one of the closest to actually being a noir film.
Yeah. Yeah,
of anything we've ever watched during Noir-vembers.
It's also the closest to being an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
It's the closest to, like, what's this show? I haven't seen this one.
Right. So I thought, oh, New World Television? Wait, you can't say the F word on New World Television? You can't show boobies on New World Television.
It's not New World
Television.
Every
other part of it feels just like New World Television.
Did New World Television make something for HBO?
Cinemax, Ryan. They made it for Cinemax.
No, Cinemax would have rejected it. They were like, not enough sex. And too much sex with Beau Bridges. Thank you very much.
I know we're not at final questions, but how much sex is too much sex with Beau Bridges?
Look, we can't kink shame people. Everyone's got a kink. Someone's got a Beau Bridges kink. Someone out there is like, what? I don't get why you're laughing.
Well, we might as well dive into it because what we're talking about.
Let's go.
1987's The Killing Time.
Here, in this place of peaceful beauty, everyone has something to hide.
Is my Laura taking good care of you?
What are you doing?
I love you.
A woman who belongs to another man.
Let me go!
She's gonna do whatever you want, huh?
A man she must escape.
Sam, you've got to help me.
A small town sheriff who's in over his head.
You can't do this! This is murder! First degree murder!
And a stranger who will change every life.
My name is Brian Morris.
Your new deputy.
Anything wrong, Mr. Winslow?
He gets between me and a deer, the gun goes off, wham! He's gone!
30 years, I never saw anything like this.
Who are you?
Best thing to do is just muddy the waters.
Did you do it, son?
You made a perfect murder, you mean planning?
I didn't kill him, I was trying to stop you!
Guts.
Come on, do it, Carl, arrest me!
In the past, that just caught up with you.
Luck.
Well, that's the truth.
Come on, Sam!
Here, in this place of peaceful beauty, the difference between guilt and innocence is how far they're willing to go.
I'm having fun now!
The Killing Time is now.
That's right, 1987's The Killing Time, a.k.a. A Perfect Stranger, brought to you by Mexico. They're perfect place to think about retiring to, even if you never go through with it. Boy, mm-hmm. there's lots of great stuff in mm-hmm. Mexico. If you could ever get there, could you? You could, but will you? You won't. And Bulova. Bulova? Clocks. Whether you're trying to stay on schedule at the office or know what time it is when your boss is having his retirement when you need to get out to that lighthouse, Bulova knows how best to help you kill time.
Ooh, that was a good one. Nice.
Yeah, this movie is directed by Rick King, who previously had directed the 1984 drama Hard Choices and the Pele soccer drama Hot Shot.
I've seen it.
Have you?
Yes. Yeah. Remember, there was a time when we were young Pele movies were, especially if there was any kind of end of season soccer party, it was Pele movies.
Yeah. I mean, well, Victory for sure. I know Victory. I remember that. Yeah. But I don't remember Hot Shot, though. I did watch the trailer and, ooh, do I want to watch Hot Shot?
Is it a new world?
No, it's not, but what it does remind me of...
Could it be?
It feels like a No Retreat, No Surrender, but Pele is a real human being that exists on Earth and not a ghost.
So. You sure?
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. Maybe. but anyway, he directed those two before this, but would find his greatest success, that is to say Rick King, not Pele, he would find his greatest success years after this movie with the 1990 Corey Haim vehicle Prayer of the Roller Boys. No, I'm kidding. He actually...
He didn't do that?
He directed Prayer of the Roller Boys for sure. Ooh. No, yes. Yes. Which I feel like we will talk about when we get to Knights of the City, because they're like practically the same movie. But in any mm-hmm. case, no, he actually wrote the script for 1991's Point Break. And that is...
I've seen it.
Yeah, I think we've all seen that one.
Just want to make sure in case anyone was doubting. Yeah,
we've seen it and it doesn't have any Pele in it.
No.
He's not in it whatsoever. 100%
Pele free.
Lacking in Pele.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only criticism of Point That's Blank.
Right. Yeah. If there's anything negative, oh,
wait,
you could
is
say
it Point
about
Blank
it.
Or Point Break?
Point
Break.
Point Break. Point Blank's a different movie. This stars Beau Bridges, who was a few years away from the fabulous Baker Boys, which I think he already had a pretty well established career at this point, but that certainly took him up another level. But already at this point in time of his career, he already had the eyebrows of a man twice his age.
Got him.
Yeah. That was our commanding eyebrows.
Those are yes, they are. This also stars Kiefer Sutherland in what Wikipedia says, quote, was Sutherland's first role as a central character in an American film. But I think that's maybe stretching it a bit, as Sutherland would also appear in a little film called The Lost Boys, which was also released in 1987. But I admit, he shot this one first, I think, is maybe how this wins in that. Sutherland had appeared in smaller roles in American films, like Stand By Me and Max Dugan Returns, as he transitioned from his native Canada to America. While The Lost Boys may be the most significant movie for Sutherland career-wise, this was a big movie for him personally, as he met his first wife on this film, and that is Camelia Kath, who plays Laura in the film. They would get married in 1987, having met on this movie, and they would then have their daughter the following year, Sarah Sutherland, who played Julia Louis-Dreyfus' daughter in Veep.
So wait, did she try to then kill Kiefer Sutherland later?
I think we're still waiting on that to have. We're still waiting on that plot.
But
to happen.
That's still an option.
That's coming.
Right?
That's coming. Okay. I'm sure.
All right.
Sure.
I just feel like I really wasted the first part of our marriage not trying to kill you, Ryan. I don't know.
It really. Well, I mean,
still time.
I know we're not at what's this movie about, but it just feels like years wasted. We could have been in a competitive kill off with one another.
This also stars Joe Don Baker, who had starred in tons of great exploitation films in the 1970s, like Walking Tall and Framed and so many others. Though he was having a tricky time in 1987. Of course, he had just been in Fletch, which is something I think Mark and I have probably seen him in probably more than anything else. But he told Marilyn Beck in July 1987, he said, quote, "I'm a Southern wasp and I just don't fit in Hollywood. I can't get hired for anything here." He says, "England saved my career the last few years." And of course, he was talking about the fact that he was in The Living Daylights, the James Bond movie. But he was having a resurgence because he was not only in this movie, but he was also in Leonard Six, the Bill Cosby movie. So.
But I'm sure at the time he thought, this is going to be my Fabulous Baker Boys. This is going to take me to the next level. Even though the Fabulous Baker Boys
had not been made. He was like.
He just knew it was coming. He knew it was coming.
We all could see it. In the end, we all could see it coming, really, if we're honest with ourselves.
Like a retirement home in Mexico where you can see it coming. You may never get there.
You're never going to get there, but boy, you can see it. Here's where you can watch The Killing Time. Sadly, not available a whole lot of places. It is on this Scorpion Blu-ray, which is, I think, somewhat out of print, but I can't imagine it's going for a ton of money on eBay, but that's where you can get it. You can also see it is currently at least uploaded to Daily Motion if you want to annoy yourself with how many commercials you're going to have to see while you watch it. Is that how you watched it, Mark?
No, I used to own the VHS of this. Then I owned the DVD of this. I really never watched it when I owned either copy. Well, I bought the
connoisseur.
I bought the VHS at Tower Outlet way back.
Oh, okay, just because it was New World.
Yeah, because it was New World, and then I got rid of my VHS. And at one time, my wife bought me a whole bunch of replacement movies for these movies that she saw in my collection, and I had the DVD, and then I got rid of all the DVDs, and I realized this morning I don't own this. So I watched it. I tried to watch it on Daily Motion, but the quality was terrible. So I watched it on some knockoff streaming. I don't even think it's streaming in the United States channel.
Okay, got it.
But the quality was great. Really good.
Well, there you go. It is available, and you can also find somewhere Mark's VHS copy and DVD. So you can also watch it that way.
In the yard sale circuit.
And if you can return that back to me, we'll drop my home address in the link after we put this one up. So.
Mark would always put property of Mark on all of it. You know it's his. He didn't watch it, but boy, did he put his stickers all over it.
Oh, God. I feel like that's coming for Rybusters. I wish that idea hadn't come up because, oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, now let's get into what this movie is about. Mark, what is The Killing Time about?
The Killing Time is about Project Scope Creep. Okay, so you start off with a simple enough plan, right? Let's say you're going to do something like, I'm going to add a bathroom to my house.
Okay, sure.
Or kill your abusive husband. Either way, you put a plan together. Everyone agrees on the budget.
Both are weekend plans,
no matter what. I mean the approach, right. But then someone comes up with what they think is a better plan, and everyone agrees, and you're like, hey, wait, hold on. This is like a way different plan than we originally agreed to, and this is going to heavily increase scope, but nobody's going to listen because they're like, no, this new plan, it's going to be super cool, and everyone's going to really love it. And you have now all these other people involved, and everything has to go absolutely perfect, and there's so many variables. And if it doesn't happen that way, you're going to be over budget, you're going to run over time, and in the end, somebody's going to suspect you for murder.
Does the bathroom get redone, though, Mark?
It might, but you might also go to jail.
Oh, shit.
I mean, it's a high-stakes game in the Scope Creep world.
Erica, what is The Killing Time about?
For me, it was very different, Mark. This is what happens when you grow up in a small town and you don't leave it. This is what happens. Mm-hmm. You're bored. Mm-hmm. You see all the same people. You see all the same shops. So guess what sounds exciting? Murder. Hmm. Leave your small towns.
I think that your synopsis of this movie and mine is a yes and.
Oh.
But our worlds can live together. Oh. Even in a small town, trying to kill your husband or add a bathroom can get wildly out of hand.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, for me, guys, I thought this movie was about that even small coastal town police departments, they need an HR person. You can't go without.
Amen.
This movie could have been avoided if somebody simply asked for an ID and wanted to just quickly have him fill out some quick.
Did anybody I-9 Brian onboarding? Mars? I don't think so. Because those photos would not have matched.
Yeah.
That background check would have proved he was deceased. Or missing.
Yeah. I mean, eventually the word does get out. It goes across the dot matrix.
Also, are we dipping into wrongful termination territory because we didn't allow someone to retire? I mean, there's so many things wrong.
There's a lot.
Also, forcing someone to wrap fish during their workday, pretty sure that's out of the scope of the day-to-day roles and responsibilities.
He's not a legit employee, so he could get away with that one, though.
Okay. All right.
He's still in his 90-day probationary period, so
he's not the person he says he is. He's not in any probation.
Yeah.
It also seemed that the people working at the police station, and this I think is still validating your point, Ryan, were somewhat surprised that a new guy showed up.
That's true.
Yeah.
A new guy.
Mm-hmm. They don't mention him at all until he shows up, and once he shows up, he's like, oh, yeah, a new guy. I mean, one guy is retiring. There's two of you. I mean,
but it also demonstrates, it also brings up the fact that they don't have a CFO, because someone would have been like, wait, how am I paying for a third guy? I can barely pay for the two of you. Mm-hmm. And now we have a third guy.
They don't
the
seem to have any other staff other than the two of them. I don't know. And there's a lot of dart throwing going on all day. There's a lot of fishing happening during work hours. I don't know
how. Public intoxication.
How are they getting paid? Who is accounts payable? How is this all happening?
Also, do all small towns have really cozy police departments with a fireplace?
I know. It was nice.
That was nice.
Yeah, it was.
And free living accommodations?
Yeah.
And apparently, like, great job security, because these guys have been at it for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's get this all cleared up by Letterboxd. We're on Letterboxd. And so give us a follow there if you like. This is the Letterboxd synopsis for The Killing Time. After a psychopath murders a man who was on his way to a job as a deputy sheriff in a small California town. Really giving a lot of credence to the opening 3 minutes of this movie.
Yes.
Really making
this was like a Mad Lib where the first, instead of a noun and a verb, they gave the first two sentences for you to fill in the blank as to how this movie, what the plot of this movie is.
Sure. He assumes the deputy's identity and arrives in town to start his new, quote, job.
Oh, get him, Letterboxd. Get him.
What he doesn't know is that the recently appointed sheriff and his mistress are plotting to murder her evil husband and blame it on the new deputy. This synopsis is so pro Kiefer.
Yeah.
They saw him on the poster with the gun and they were like, this poor guy is being really... I feel bad for this guy. He's getting screwed.
Is this a wrong place, wrong time scenario?
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Loves his dad, I guess. You know, struggles to sleep, has some sleep paralysis. But, you know, other than that.
I mean, I do think there's a question to be raised about whether or not the two main characters in this are indeed the heroes of the story. I mean, I agree with that to an extent, but I also, it's Keith, Kiefer.
I did the same thing on accent. I want to say Keither. Keith, I want to say his name is Keith. I want to say Keith Sutherland.
Yeah. Kiefer.
Kiefer.
Kiefer is not up to any good.
Mm-hmm.
He's not exactly a good dude.
No. But that's why we have Joe Don Baker playing he's the hero of the movie.
He is the hero of the movie. Yeah. I'm glad you said that. I agree. We do start this movie, however, in like, I guess, Vasquez Rocks? Is that where we were? I mean...
Looks like it, yeah.
Kiefer does kill this guy, as we're talking about, but then has the decency to bury him. And he crosses himself, and I'm like, oh, Kiefer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why people are rooting for him. Gold.
Yeah. Letterboxd got to that part and was like, he's not a bad guy. He's a good dude. Even though he killed someone.
He's a good bad.
Yeah. Before we learn more about Kiefer, though... we have to get to the sleepy coastal town of Santa Alba, where Beau Bridges is the sheriff to be and a hunky eligible bachelor. But he's the most eligible bachelor, I guess, because no one knows about Michael Madsen because he lives in the forest growing his weed. Because he
seriously
would rocket to the top of the list. I would have
my
to think.
God.
You know, again, no offense to Beau Bridges, but I mean, this is young Michael Madsen here, and wow.
But let's just take stock for a second here. We're talking about a New World Pictures movie with Beau Bridges, Keither Sutherland. Wayne Rogers, who from MASH, who we haven't even got to yet, Joe Don Baker, and Michael Madsen. This movie is playing well above its league in just star power alone.
Yeah, star power is off the charts in this movie for sure.
Yeah, I'm afraid I can never come back. Should this be my last episode? I'm afraid that I might peak here, and then I don't know if I can return. Guys, I'm scared.
Are you submitting your 2-week notice on this episode? Because keep in mind, you will still have to do the next 2 weeks. And then when you do resign, we will call you and you'll have to come back to the podcast. Because
I'm never getting to Mexico.
You're never getting to Mexico.
You're never getting to Mexico. You're not getting there. I mean, this has been a pretty amazing month. Because we've also had Peter O'Toole. I mean, we've had some stacked cast. The cast of Foxtrot's pretty
some
stacked.
Serious star power. Yeah.
This is crazy. It feels weird.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, it doesn't
feel right.
After Vidtober, it feels weird to have a movie with this much going on.
Don't forget, Ryan, it's called Vidtober Toonie. Say the whole thing. You can't back out on it now. Say the whole thing.
It doesn't need to be a worldie because I win for the worst.
No, it's a worldie
month title. It is
no,
the
it's
worst.
A new worldie. It's a new category.
There's nothing worse than that one.
Worst
I win. Is the worst. Anyway, we learn a bit about Bo in that he is very clearly still in love with his old girlfriend Laura, who's I don't know when they dated. Were they high school sweethearts? I don't know.
Yeah, they said that they were high school sweethearts.
No, he says that they used to be at one point in time a couple in town. I don't.
I guess my mind made that up as a way to rationalize why she's with Beau Bridges. So I was like, right. I've got to piece together a story that helps me make sense of all of this.
But she instead then married the richest man in town, Jake Winslow, as Mark mentioned, played by MASH actor Wayne Rogers, who is maybe the one person in town who doesn't know that Laura and Sam are doing it on the side? Or are we seeing the moment when they start the affair? Or are we just seeing the moment when they're already having the affair? And I mean,
I think he, much like the viewers, is like, him, come on. You're not sleeping with him. Come on. Michael Madsen's in the woods growing weed. Him? I don't feel like this guy's a risk. I don't think he's a threat. I don't think he's a threat.
Did you see that hunky new cop in town?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got options now.
Come on.
And in life, she truly did pick the young hunky deputy.
Right.
Yeah.
But when we are first introduced to his character, he is insinuating that they're having an affair to Bo Bridges' character. So I think the premise is that they've been having an affair. He knows about it because he gives Sam a hard time about it. And it's almost like, I'm going to let you get away with this, but could you just back off just a little bit? Can you just... cut down on that sweet, sweet Bo love?
And it's like...
keeps asking me to grow my eyebrows out thicker, and I'm just...
plucking those eyebrows, would you? I want them thick.
My hair is too curly for a mullet. I can't grow it.
Hi, Sam. Where's your uniform?
I put my party clothes on to come see you.
You look handsome.
Their daughter? That's their daughter, right? It's like...
It's their daughter, yeah. It's,
they have this daughter, and she... when Bo comes in to say goodnight to her, because she apparently needs him to, she's like, ooh la la, you look so handsome. I'm like, what is happening? Why is she so fixated on this dude?
That was a little like, wink, because Jake, the husband, looks to me like Will Ferrell. And so...
Erica, not familiar with the TV show MASH.
I don't remember it. I don't think I watched it enough. And so I thought he looked very similar to Will Ferrell. So when you see the daughter, though, she has the dark hair, dark eyes. She looks more like Bo Bridges and her mom.
Her eyebrows?
So that's what I thought. Her eyebrows were so thick. So I thought that was a nod to, like, maybe she's not...
Right.
You know, maybe she is his daughter
Yeah.
Plus, running the numbers, looking at the daughter, because I agree with you. At first, I thought, is that Bo Bridges' daughter? Maybe, like, they were together, they had the daughter, but she married Jake, but then the daughter lives with them. That's what I thought at first. But then they make it clear that it is Jake's daughter, which then I was even more impressed, because looking at Jake's age, 55, so he had this kid at 47? Good on you. For diving in at 47 and being like,
time for fatherhood.
I built an empire. Now it's time to
build a family. Yeah. And he is doing a lot of stuff in town, I guess. What that is a little nebulous, but he does offer Sam a job.
Well, our little community is going to need a lot of security. We're looking to attract people of substance, people with a lot of money. You could run the whole show.
Thanks. I like what I'm doing now.
Well, if you don't mind my asking, how much are you making now?
I don't think this is the time or place.
Sweetheart, please, let Sam answer, huh?
15, 20,000.
Well, which is it, 15 or 20?
I'll be making 20 when I take over for Carl.
How would you like to make 5 times that amount as my head of security?
There's only one problem with that. I'd have to answer to you. No, I'm just messing with you.
Oh, I mean, Nosy never also goes, yeah, no, I'll take the job. He's still like, yeah, I'm just kidding, but also I'm not gonna say whether or not I'll take that job. I'm not gonna say yes either, so I'm probably not joking. Going back to what we're saying about the fact that he know whether Bo Bridges is or is not in his wife,
in his wife, is that what you just said?
Yep.
Whoa.
Seem to be like, hey, why don't I get you a job, that way you will feel like you were betraying me. You know, it would really put some stakes on that. Maybe. I don't know.
I think it's keep your enemies closer.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I mean.
I can just I can keep tabs on you because you'll be right next to me.
I felt like it was get a better job so that you can have benefits for your love child. You need to provide for her.
I don't know if you crunched the numbers, but $15,000 salary from 1987 dollars to now, I don't know if you did the, did you crunch the numbers? I did it for
I
you.
Didn't
if you
because
didn't.
I well, I'm glad you did, because I was taken aback by 15,000 to 20,000. I mean, that's a massive leap, because 20,000, that you're, that's a 25% difference. That's like, I'm making somewhere between, you know, 500,000 and 750. Well, wait, what?
Yeah. It's good range. It's good range. Yeah, somewhere like, in there.
Somewhere in there. Wow. That's wild.
But in reality, the lower number I said, but
right. And he's making 510.
So $15,000 in today's money is somewhere around $41,000 to $42,000. And
okay. Just Santa Jessica Alba isn't very expensive to live in.
Nope.
And no. So just a
tiny town.
Tiny town.
Around, and the boss buys all the drinks. Speaking of Joe Don Baker as Carl, I love that he gets a card that says Joe Don Baker as Carl Cunningham. Like, you're like, okay. Oh, he's playing Carl Cunningham. Wow, that's something. We don't know who that is. I love it. Anyway, Joe Don Baker, who wants to retire and get drunk in Mexico, surrounded by beautiful women and, I presume, his wife?
I don't think that's his wife.
I don't think that was his wife, Ryan.
Does he just hook up with her?
No. Town hottie.
He hooks up with her before he leaves town, because she's like, yes. Oh, I better get this guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm. She puts a sombrero on his head, and that's like the wink.
Yeah.
I have another sombrero you can put on your head.
Oh.
Safe sex. Nice. Oh, good job, wow. Mark.
No.
Guys, save that for the safe sex podcast.
I get it. Good call.
No.
Good call.
She calls her a sombrero.
Oh, no. Oh no!
Olay.
Oh no!
Well, okay. Well, then he's not married. That makes a lot more sense that he wants to go off.
But he got Olayed.
Well, he's hoping. He did the night of his retirement party. That's for sure.
That might be the worst joke I've ever made. Man. Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Mark, don't.
Listeners are like, no, Mark. That is not the worst.
Kiefer also shows up, claiming to be the new deputy. He shot back in Vasquez Rocks and moves into the same trailer that Mel Gibson lived in during Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, they had to move it away from being actually on the beach because the seas are rising, so they put it up on the bluffs. But otherwise, it's the exact same scenario.
What's interesting is that despite Kiefer playing the villain, though, we get to see like one of his nightmares. Which is very weird, where I guess his dad, where he sees his dad hang himself. I think this is why the letterbox synopsis writer was like, he's our hero. This is our guy. We see his, we see a little bit of his nightmares. We see a little bit into him as a child, seeing his dead father. Like, this is our guy. This is the dude. This is the hero of the film.
Do you think it's that dream sequence that got two of the writers of this movie jobs writing for Freddy's Nightmares after this?
Definitely.
So pretty quickly here, we have a scene where Laura is driving her car and we get the old, whoops, the brake isn't working. And she goes barreling down a windy road. Inexplicably right by Beau Bridges, who's just pulled over on the side of the road, just checking out the scenery that afternoon. And it's just, people, e-brake. It's called an emergency brake. Just pull the fucking e-brake.
Mark, panic takes over and you don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you just go, let me just crash and nearly go over the cliff. You know,
I would like to think that if this were to happen to one of our listeners, in that moment of panic would be soothed as they remembered back to this episode and went, you know, Mark said pull the e-brake. I'm going to give that a try.
Mm-hmm.
And their life would be saved. So you're welcome.
And then their second thought would be, Mark also made the worst joke I've ever heard him make. So maybe I just won't pull the e-brake and I'll just think about when he said Olayed, and I'm going to just let myself go over the cliff.
Yeah, you're right. That is a more realistic scenario.
E-brake. Oh, I'm in the sky. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Don't pull it then. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah, it's too late then. That's right. Her brakes go out. Sam steps up the investigation, Sam being Bo Bridges, asking the local mechanic, which makes a lot of sense. And then Michael Madsen, the local weed farmer, which is also a choice.
Well, that's the charm of a small town. Sometimes when you need a second opinion, yeah. The other most trusted mechanic is the weed grower that lives in the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
You know a lot about cars and also growing weed, which is what you're trying to do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But also, I guess you've also driven cars. So let me get your opinion. Since our town mechanic is such a weirdo.
I have also driven cars, but I kind of look at them as a magical box. It just takes me from place to place, and I have no idea how it works.
You know how to fix cars. Have you ever had a little mouse get inside the engine and just tear it up?
Yeah, I've had mice get into my engine and make nests in the air box that I've had to clear out.
That's
a
real thing. Look at that.
Yeah, they make nests in your muffler. Yeah, it's super annoying. And they do chew on the electrical wires, which is also very annoying.
Is this like when you've put the car in the garage for a long time and they just are like, well, this thing's not going anywhere.
Yep, exactly.
Fucking mice. They're so observant. Like, this thing isn't going anywhere. This marriage is in trouble. We can chew these wires. We'll never get blamed.
That's right.
Damn mechanic would keep his mouth shut.
You're blowing us up, dude.
Yeah.
This movie would have took an odd turn if all the car trouble they had discovered was just mice that were in the garage. And they were like, someone comes in, they're saying, you got a mice infestation. Your marriage is fine.
But yeah,
your
marriage has never been better. I know we're not at final questions, but do breakfast in bed solve things?
Yes.
If you're having a real murder off, is it just solved by a breakfast in bed?
Yeah, I would say waking up expecting it.
Hmm.
And once you get it, you're like, oh, wow.
Right.
And you don't think.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, wow. You said like, that's a good. Okay, just taking a couple quick notes here. Oh, wow. Says Ryan to breakfast in bed.
Now, Laura is convinced that, obviously, as we're saying, that her husband is the culprit of her lacking of brakes. And then she tries to leave him, and he gets pretty physical with her. So she is pretty convinced and tells Sam that she thinks this is her husband.
It's not unusual for a husband to have a life insurance policy on his wife.
For $3 million?
Did Jake tell you about this?
No. Sam, what am I gonna do?
Bring Annie and stay with me.
And one day we'll come home and some guys will throw acid in our faces.
Whoa!
That's the kind of guy he is. He'd do that. With the lawyers he can buy, I'd lose Annie. I'd never see her again.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick. I miss my seagulls.
Oh yeah, deep cut. You get, for all you NWPP VIPs, you know what we're talking about. Acid in your face. That feels extreme and also oddly specific. Has he done that before? That seems
Here's where I also think that Sam is in the brightest bulb. Because it seems like he comes up with a plan, and the minute that someone pushes back on it or gives him another thought, he's like, yeah. He's like, come live with me. They'll throw acid in our face. And instead of him going, that's fucking ridiculous, he's like, well, I wouldn't want that to happen. We'll have to think about that one.
So true. He's not the brightest bulb, but he is the softest potato
in town.
Yum, 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 yum.
Yeah. Oh. She tries, as we just said, she tries to drug him because she's convinced that it's her husband. She drugs him and she packs him into a car, a running car in the garage. How did she get him in the car?
Pilates?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. A lot of Pilates.
I mean, yeah, but this is the 80s, so it's a lot of jazzercise.
Jazzercise, exactly. A lot of jazzercise.
Yeah.
Paying off.
Yeah, I mean, yikes. Anyway, she does get him into the car, but Sam arrives in time to stop her from going through with the killing. Guess it wasn't time?
Got him.
Killing time.
Yeah. boy. They do, however, settle on an idea on how to get rid of Jake once and for all.
Why would anyone believe that Brian would want to kill Jake? He just came to town. He's a cop.
We can make him believe it.
But he's going to deny he did it.
Hey, prisons are filled with people who denied they did it.
Says the future sheriff.
Anyway, I don't think Brian would have to do a hard time.
How do you
know?
The
best thing to do is just muddy the waters. Make the situation unclear.
Like all of his decision making.
This is a small town. There's always going to be someone who will suspect it was us.
Yeah, Joe Don Baker is the guy who's going to think it was the two of you. And,
yeah.
And that's but significant because he's the sheriff currently.
And did you hear him go full circle back to my previous point? It'll totally work. This guy, yeah, a lot of people are in jail that say that they didn't do it. Plus, I don't think he'd do hard time. Plus, oh, wait, they're going to blame us anyway. And he's right back to where he started.
Right.
So why go through with this plan at all?
Also, their plan to muddy the waters is to very much frame Kiefer. Like, with his cigarettes, with a button from his coat. Like, their whole plan is like, we're just going to muddy the waters by absolutely blaming one person.
mean, by perfectly framing one man.
That's how we muddy the water. Who did it? I don't know. I don't know. Probably the guy that all the evidence points to is the hope.
And the linchpin of their whole idea is a boudoir photo op that they did. where anyone would look at and say, how the fuck did the camera get right in the room with them?
Dude, if you went on back in the day to Mr. Skin and you were like, what movie does Beau Bridges show his ass? Killing Time. You're like, oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's one cheek, but man, it's there, man. It's there. It's there.
One delicious cheek.
Yeah. Now, the
one
other...
One delicious quarter pounder with cheek.
Oh, my gosh. And I was telling Erica, when they take that picture and he sees the picture, it's like, who do you think that is? I mean, what do you think? That's Michael Madsen? It's when you see his naked back and a bit of his top of his butt, you're like, that's Beau Bridges.
I know that ass.
I know who this is. I know exactly who this is.
That's my dreamy head of security. I wish.
Now, they're trying to blame this all on Kiefer, but Kiefer is onto them and he knows what they're up to. And he ends up, spoiler alert for the Killing Time. So
there are no spoilers in this movie. If you can't see, this is like a slow train pulling into station. You're just watching it come in and you're like, here it comes.
Here,
I saw that. I saw it coming.
It's a 12 piece puzzle. Like, you know where all the pieces are going. Like, it's not, you're not looking around going, did a, Did we lose a piece? What's happening? Like, no.
Maybe
no,
I'll
we
start
know.
With the border first, because this is going to be a toughie.
This is going to take... Wait, no, it's 12 pieces. Once you do the border, it's done.
Oh, look at that. It's a baked potato. Oh. Yum, 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 yum.
Okay, so... So he takes care of Jake, that is to say Kiefer, only not in the way that they expected, because Kiefer uses Bo Bridges' gun to do the job. And Joe Don Baker comes to confront Bo and lets him know he could be in trouble.
Are you saying that the Luger wasn't the murder weapon?
Kind of complicates things, doesn't it? Especially since it was your 38 that did the shooting. How long have we known each other, Sam?
I don't know. All my life.
Where did you go Saturday night after the party?
I took a walk outside just to clear my head. I saw Mary Ellen on the way out.
I know.
You think I did this, don't you?
I'm trying not to think anything.
Oh, shit, Carl! I can't believe this!
Did you do it, son?
No.
That's the truth.
Did he say, I hope that's the truth?
Yeah. Yeah. He wants to
Does
believe.
Does he not
that,
know?
He wants to believe that Sam didn't do it. That's what he thinks. But the point is, it's his gun. It's looking like it could be Sam. I love the way Joe Don Baker plays this scene. It's pretty great. I know we're not quite there. Things we love, things we hated, though we could be. But then Sam figures it out. It had to be Brian. Who else could it be? We're out of main characters.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 12-piece puzzle. Of course it was. Who else could it? There's no one else.
It's not one of the horny towns, ladies.
No, it couldn't right. be them.
Couldn't be them.
I guess it could be. It could be. Was it Kyle, the pot grower? He could have done it.
Michael Madsen
tried to do an early switch with that, but
they
don't go anywhere with it.
They would have had to get him for an extra scene. And he was like, mm-hmm. I gotta piece back to Hollywood and have a career. So sorry, guys. Man. Oh, rest in peace, Michael Madsen. We got to talk about Michael Madsen on this podcast. Incredible.
I know. Thank goodness.
Wild. I know. It's a sad passing that
he's terrific in so many things.
And
in his brief role, he's great. He is as convincing. He's the most convincing character in this movie outside of Keith Sutherland's cigarettes, which may be the most convincing part of this whole movie. Because there is no mystery that guy smokes.
Yeah, that's true. He's very comfortable smoking.
Yes. Now, Bo Bridges, not so much.
No. And also doesn't seem very convincing as a big time drinker.
No.
There's that party scene.
He can't down. There's not a world that exists where a grown man can't drink 12 ounces of Miller Lite in a competition. Like, he can't even finish the glass. He's like, oh God, it's too much for me. I can't even finish it. Come on, dude.
It was his second, to be fair, but still.
Still
he
not
had
an
a
excuse.
Big dinner. He had a big baked potato for dinner. Yum, 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 yum. I don't know, guys. I just don't know if people are going to... There's always going to be somebody on this podcast who's going to think that there's things that we loved and things that we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about The Killing Time. Mark, what did you love?
I loved that... On the night of Jake's death, Laura says that she can't go to this party because their daughter has a fever, and then proceeds to be out all night and half the next day. And I'm just thinking, her daughter's at home alone, suffering from pneumonia, maybe on the verge of death, hasn't even learned that her father just died. And right. Laura's just taking her time, like, whatevs. Just going to hang out by this cliffside, look out at things, think
I've
about
got
stuff.
A murder to plan.
Wait, that was something that you loved?
Yes.
Because so child abandonment was something that you loved.
Because they don't cover at all. Like during when she's at the lighthouse and the cops are there and everything, they're like, "Where's your daughter?" Nobody brings it up. They're just like, "Daughter who? Yep, mm-hmm. who? I don't, mm-hmm. she must not have a daughter. She must not have any kind of parental obligation because she's able to hang out here all day long."
Yeah.
Nope. She has no other responsibilities. I don't even think she has a job.
Yeah. I don't think she has a job.
Yeah. She's, right. I don't think so.
She's just living off of her husband's money.
Not even mother.
Yeah. So, I mean,
she's jerking that job.
In summary, I just like her whole laissez-faire attitude to life.
You know? That's what you liked. Okay. Woo. Phew.
Woo. Phew. Yeah. They could have gone a lot of places. We were nervous for all of them. Erica, what did you love?
I loved a number of things about this movie that we've already mentioned some of them. There was a number of stars, a number of names. There was an actual plot. There were things happening. There was small town drama. Of course, there was a weird mechanic and a guy who grows weed. There was Keither. You can never get enough of him. We have watched a movie or two movies. I can't even remember. One or two movies with his dad. And it was cool to see a young Kiefer in this. I thought that was very fun. I kept telling Ryan, doesn't he look like his dad? So observant. Nothing gets by me. I just really liked this movie. It was a nice breath of fresh air on the old New World Pictures. I didn't realize this was a New World. I hadn't seen this one before. So I thought it was really fun. It's kind of like a Lifetime movie, you know, Lifetime TV movie for the big screen. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love the cast, but I want to particularly shout out again Joe Don Baker. I love Joe Don in this. He doesn't always get the chance to play a nice guy.
Right.
He plays a villain a lot. I mean, outside of the 70s when he would do a lot of, like, he was the hero a lot. And then he gets into the 80s, and the time that I saw him in lots of movies, he never played a good guy. So it was nice to see him as a real, not just like, you know, an ass-kicking hero, but just like a nice dude. A dude that like cared about his coworker, cared about his friends, you know, was hoping to just go off to Mexico. He was just like a good dude. And I really liked him in this. And it was great to see. And we just lost Joe Don Baker this year. And so it was great to see him in this, as well as Michael Madsen. I mean, we just lost both of them this year. And here we are talking about a movie that had both of them. Even Beau Bridges is very good in this. And it's a great cast, and it's like, after Vidtober, it was, we needed this. We needed this. Yeah. What did we hate? Mark, let's start with you.
Just really quickly, one thing that I did love also is that Kiefer Sutherland's character, he doesn't have an inside voice, so they do a lot of cutaway where he just like, says what he's thinking out loud. Mm-hmm. So like Beau Bridges, he offers him a shot and Beau Bridges is like, yeah, maybe another time because he's on the job.
Yeah.
And he walks out and he goes, fuck you too. I'm like, you didn't have to say that, but
yeah,
I like that we know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice. Yeah. But what I hated is this plan is bullshit. It's overly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
They take these nude pictures. The camera's way too close. Anyone would look at those pictures and say, wait, how was someone in the room with them?
I can't hate those naked pictures. That was amazing. That whole section.
Sam puts together this whole plan, but Laura's going to do the shooting because he's so easily convinced that she can do it and be accurate. And he's not going to potentially put her life in danger. Even minutes before it's all supposed to happen, he gets looped into a drinking game. What you just say no. Just say no, I'm not drinking tonight. I've got some things I gotta do tomorrow. I gotta get up early, gotta go to the gym.
It's his boss's retirement party. He can't get out of drinking on that.
And it didn't have to be that complicated because you could put together a much more concise plan that's more effective. Say, for example.
Oh,
can't keep me here, Chief. Maybe I'm not gonna keep you in here. Maybe I'm gonna blow your brains out. Well, now, I'm no lawyer, but I do believe that's a violation of my rights. After I shoot you,
I stick myself in the arm with this knife. Then I place the knife in your dead hand.
Self-defense.
We don't do it much anymore, but boy, back in the old days. You're serious. Ask anybody.
Now that's a good plan.
That is a good plan.
Easy to understand.
Yeah.
You get it, you can visualize how it's gonna play out. Mm-hmm. This movie needed to take a little bit of a cue from Fletch.
Well, also, he mentions that plan, too, where he's like, oh, take him on a hunting trip. And, you know, if he gets between me and the deer, like.
Honestly, drugging him with Xanax or whatever and putting him in the car and having carbon monoxide poisoning, easy breezy. I mean, her fingerprints were all over the car, which would have been a rough one. But, yeah. Like, there are better plans. And this is, like, so... It's just so overthought. There's too many intricacies. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it didn't have to be this complicated.
I'm similar in that I don't like that he was like, no, you can't do this. This is first degree murder. I won't let you. And he's saying it out of concern for her, but also maybe his job as being a member of the police department. And then she's like, no, I got to do it. I want to kill him. And he's like, eh, all right. Wait,
again, easily convince that guy.
What? Mm-hmm. Wait, when was the moment where she said, I have to do, like, I know she mentions to him a couple times he could kill us. He could go and throw acid, have hire guys to throw acid in our faces, which seems highly unlikely. And I feel like you could argue against that pretty easily. But he just seems very like, no, we can't do this. We have to be, you know. And then like, oh, well, but also what if I do set up something and then you can shoot him? Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, what? That is ludicrous. Come on, yep. Man. Erica, what did you hate?
I too hated the complexity of the plan. I just, it felt like it was a plan hatched by two really immature people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I felt like even if they pulled it off, wouldn't there still be complications with them being together? To their point, everybody would think that they did it. There's still the kid at play. It's just messy. But I hated that we never went back to Michael Madsen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt like there was a little bit more they could have done with that. More of a like bait and switch or more of a, maybe they're going to try to frame him or something like that. I just felt like we didn't get enough of him. He was really underused. So that was what I hated, that we just didn't get to see more.
Why wouldn't you try to blame him? He's just a guy who lives in the woods trying to,
they go
so
far to set him up as he's like sort of, you know, not,
why suddenly are you throwing the deputy on the bus, under the bus? Like, just cause I mean,
yeah,
they don't, even she asked, why him? Why Brian? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a cop. He just got mm-hmm. here. Like,
yeah.
Why not?
So I wanted more Madsen. That's what I hated. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been made sense for Stu to be, well, he got mad. We burned up his crop. So he, you know,
yeah, took revenge. So he wanted revenge. Yeah.
All right. Let's switch to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
Oh, definitely the chase in the sand dunes, because.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. There's first of all, there's no way on God's green earth that Bo Bridges can outrun Keith or Sutherland. But so, and it felt like even the director at some point was like, there's no way that's gonna fly. Mm-hmm. So we could do it for a bit, but he's gonna get gassed real quick.
Yeah.
So they have him hide in the weeds, which I'm like, was that a conscious decision, or were they like, we can't pull off this chase for too much longer? No one's going to believe
it.
It
can't go for very long.
But then at the very end, Kiefer Sutherland's character is pointing a gun at Sam, which is Bo Bridges. Bo Bridges is on his knees, and he's going to shoot him. And then a gunfire goes off, and we see that Kiefer Sutherland's hit, and he lays forward, and we see it's Joe Don Baker's character way up in the sand dune that had shot him. I couldn't get a good look, but it looked like a bolt action 270.
Mm.
Which
you could say literally any gun, and we would both go, yeah.
Well, it's a high caliber rifle, which means very likely the bullet would have traveled through Kiefer Sutherland and right into Bo Bridges.
I don't know what the gun was, but I didn't see a make or model, but I definitely thought the same thing. I was like,
and it that's got a him little, on the, that's a little, on the side rib.
You shot him a little close to Beau Bridges for that to not affect Beau Bridges.
Right.
Not only in like, could have gone through him, but also like, where's the blood? Because he is a foot away from him.
For so, sure. Like,
at the very least.
And even if it didn't hit him, you would immediately think, holy crap, you shot this person that's right in front of me. I could have been shot. But what I loved about it and why it was my favorite scene is it reinforces my point that Sam is not smart. Because he just goes, huh, well, that ended that.
That was a close one.
That was a close one. And didn't get up and go, oh my God, you almost shot me, dude. I mean, thank you, but holy crap. He's just like, well, problem solved.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's over. What a day. What a day we've had. Then he just walks with her down the beach like, ugh. Crazy time. We're going to look back on this and laugh.
Oh, yeah, we're walking around with the same
sand dunes that we were where he was chasing me and he almost killed me. I mean, how hilarious.
Wild.
How fun. Yeah. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
I'm torn between two favorite scenes. One we have already mentioned, which is the boudoir photo shoot scene. I can't.
That's mine.
Get out of my mind. I don't want to get out of my mind. It's hilarious.
It's brief but wonderful.
It's brief but wonderful. It's absolutely not a flattering photo. I just feel like Jake would have looked at it and been like, this is the guy. This is the guy.
And, okay, and also the note that he flips over says, you want the negative, right? And I'm like, no. Not really. Yeah. This is ew. Of that. Yeah. I don't think
no, thank
so.
You.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I saw one, and that's frankly more than enough.
Yeah. Not looking to print doubles of this.
If you want to make photos of this and put this out somewhere, I mean, I guess I'm good. Not into it though. I'm good.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. So that is your scene.
That one, and I also loved the retirement party.
Yes.
I just thought it was just really, it's great. It kind of shows you the town and, you know, they make a big deal of it and they have the hall and they've decorated and there's food. Like, I just really, really liked that scene a lot. And just seeing the tension that's going on and they're watching, Sam's watching the clock and, you know, Jake's kind of watching the clock and, you know, they're both watching it for different reasons. And I just think that scene is great.
I agree with you. I think it's great. And one of the things that I loved about it too is they do kind of this long shot of Joe Don Baker's character coming into the party and kind of following him through.
Mm-hmm.
And I caught three townspeople extras fully locking eyes with the camera as he walked through.
Terrific. That's terrific. I did not notice that. I'm going to have to rewatch that. That's funny.
All right, let's get into some final questions. Here are our final questions for The Killing Time. How long does it normally take to move up from deputy to something a bit higher?
Well, there's no HR there, so I mean, God, who knows? It seems like his entire life.
Like years.
He said he's known him for his whole life, so yeah.
Was Annie at grandma's for a lot of the end there? Or what happened to Annie there?
Home alone. Nobody's sure.
That's my point.
I don't know. Yeah.
She had a fever and they just abandoned her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And even at the end.
Maybe Kiefer was watching her.
Yeah, maybe.
Michael Madsen. Keeping an eye out. Michael Madsen. Yeah,
Michael Madsen's babysitting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and they're out there walking at the end shot, just walking on the beach. I'm like, where's Annie? Is Annie all right? Do we like these two? Because like,
laissez-faire.
They're
awful. Both very laissez-faire.
Yeah. Not great parents. Not
for each other.
Terrible for children.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
When Jake goes to the mailbox and he gets the blackmail note, do you think it would have gone differently if he had opened the publisher's clearinghouse letter first. Like, maybe everything would have changed.
For him. If he was a winner.
Or what if he treated mail like I do, and I would have looked at that letter and been like, nah, I'll get to this later. Is there a world where this movie takes 5 days longer? Because they're like, did he open the letter? No, it's sitting on his desk. He hasn't opened it yet.
We have been at this lighthouse at 9 p.m. for 5 days straight. When is he coming?
Exactly.
So who took out her brakes?
He who did it. He did it. He just poked a little hole in it. Yeah.
Annie.
The ultimate revenge.
She's like, you're never around, Snip.
Yeah.
I want to go live with Sam.
Ooh, I want to go live with Deputy Sam.
Did Kiefer ask to sit next to the dot matrix printer, or did he just luck out?
I think he just lucked out.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that that was a strategic move to see what was going over the telewire or whatever it is. But mm-hmm. I think it was just dumb luck that he happened to be there and that they asked him to fold fish at the same time. Fold fish, pack fish.
Yeah.
At the same time. I have a final question because this one perplexed me with this movie.
Okay.
If you're... lover has put in you a position where you think that you're being framed for murder and she thinks that you're trying to frame her for murder, which is a pretty serious offense. Does a little sexy time just kind of like wrap that up where you're like, eh, no big deal. I'm good.
I mean, in this story.
Mm-hmm. As long as it's then accompanied by a next day breakfast in bed.
Right.
Right. Okay. No, that makes sense.
That really covers a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That really does take care of a lot.
I feel like the 80s really made me believe that breakfast in bed solved anything. It was a real problem solver. It also made me believe
that breakfast in bed was something that we were going to happen a lot as you got became an adult.
Or just happen.
Yeah. At all.
Also, breakfast in bed personally seems like my nightmare because then I'm like, oh my God, the opportunity for me to spill and make a mess in here is very high. Mm-hmm. Even with a tray table, it's very high.
Plus, in the 80s, you had a lot of those breakfast in bed tables. Do you think that that's still a viable market today? Like, do people, is that something that people still buy?
Yes. Yes, oh, it is.
Okay. All right.
Ryan believes in it very strongly. He's looking over. Listeners, he's looking over at it right now. There it is. Oh, he's showing it. He has one. Okay.
It's on the bed.
Okay. All right. Well, I stand corrected.
My sometimes bed he desk. Does eat breakfast on it. It's not served to him, but he does eat breakfast on it. It's a self-serve.
I don't get breakfast in bed. All right. There's not much in terms of research for this movie, so let's go quickly through it. It does start shooting October 1986 in Mendocino, California. It was originally supposed to be planned for the East Coast. And the producers went out and looked around North Carolina, Florida. Eventually, the producers we talked about, or the producers of this movie, I should say, the producers, Robert Levy, Peter Abrams, they actually were convinced to go up and check out Mendocino. And they went up there and they said, yeah, let's shoot here. In fact, Abrams said to the Ukiah Daily Journal in October 1986, he said, it actually saved us quite a bit of money. We haven't had to change license plates and make a lot of signs. Which is good because the movie only had a budget of $1 million.
No kidding. They got that much star power for $1 million.
People were doing this for a song, I guess. Because, well, Kiefer is like, you know, very early in his career. So, and Madsen, those both are, they're very, very early on. So they're not going to command a lot. But you're talking Joe Don Baker, Beau Bridges. Like they're going to take up a good amount of that budget, I have to think. They shot in Mendocino at the Point Cabrillo Lighthouse, the Russian Gulch along the headlands and north of Fort Bragg at Ten Mile River and the Dunes, which is where the ending goes. It was shot under the title of Perfect Stranger. It doesn't get called The Killing Time until it gets to New World. The producers go on from this, and they apparently like the experience of working on this movie because they also produce this and produce Point Break.
Hmm.
And from Point Break, they go on to produce Warlock, The Armageddon, the second in the Warlock series, which we have discussed on this podcast.
I've seen it.
And from there, Mark, get ready. Cue it up again, because they produced a lot of the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen twins movies.
I've seen it.
I want pizza. P-I-Z-Z-A.
Give me pizza.
God, I'm going to go watch that as soon as this is
over. Oh, my God. Oh, if you guys know what we're talking
Slow-mo,
about,
give
bless.
Me pizza.
Oh, man. Yeah, this movie then gets released into theaters in the fall of 1987. Do you think Siskel and Ebert liked it or not?
I think they liked it.
Split decision.
They both hated it.
What the heck? Why? Rude.
Yeah, they did not like it.
I didn't like this one too much.
Come to think of it, I didn't either.
It gets released from New World Video in somewhere around April 1988. So the following year, it gets released with... Erica, you were talking about it before, and I didn't want to say it at the moment, but Apprentice to Murder. So the Donald Sutherland movie that New World did. So that gets released
Sutherland Fest.
At the same time. The Killing Time, of course, is on sale at first. In April 1988, it is on sale for $80. The
$80.
Apprentice to Murder. Also, $80.
$80.
How much is it to rent those at Ridebusters?
$80.
Pretty cheap. $8.
Wow.
For both.
Oh, okay. All right. That's
Prison, also released in April 1988 by New World Video. Also for $80. But very, very quickly, I saw an ad as I was looking this up. Just in a week later, there's an ad for The Killing Time. There's an ad for The Killing Time.
Shit.
Where all of a sudden it goes from $80 to now $61. A week later, they're like, let's get those orders in, guys. Come on now. We're lowering the price. And that is it. That is it for The Killing Time.
I miss it already.
Yeah. I mean, what a cast. My gosh.
What a cast.
We're getting spoiled here in New Warvember 2.
Mm-hmm.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to check out all of our other episodes for New Warvember, from this one or the previous iteration or any of our episodes in general, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where we have a bunch of t-shirts like the one I'm wearing now. You can buy that at a new lower price. And you can check out
just
our
$61.
Our interviews. It was $80 and now it's $61 to buy a t-shirt. You can find all those things at our website. It's just that simple. And we'll see you next time in the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description.
Are you a film fan who loves the ultimate home video experience? Look no further than The Disconnected, Your host, Ryan Verrill, is your go-to source for the latest and most accurate information on home video releases, exclusive interviews with industry insiders and filmmakers, and has established a thriving community where every film and physical media enthusiast feels welcome. From hidden gems to blockbuster hits, The Disconnected brings you insider knowledge and a welcoming space to share your love of cinema. Watch every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific for the live announcements show and follow The Disconnected on social media to stay updated. Subscribe to The Disconnected on YouTube or on the podcast provider of your choice and dive into a world where every movie night is an adventure.